Sufi was Sufi Junto. The next thing they will take was a point in Bereshis. Okay? A point in Bereshis.
What?
Okay. So, in Bereshis, it says like this. Bereshis Gimel. Va'nachash, it's an interesting thing. If you take a look, there's a few psukim here. A few psukim here that really are describe, give a description of the development of, the full development of sin. Stages of the development of sin. What is the whole genesis of sin? Analysis of sin. And that is from the Nachash until Pasuk Zion, actually. These six psalms. Okay? Shed some light on how the Torah describes a person, how a person ultimately, this is really the ultimate the ultimate development of the chote. Okay, it's an interesting thing. Step by step. First thing is Vanochashay Arm Koche Asasada Sharasada Shem Lakim Vayomar Elisha. Afki Omar Elokim Lo Sochlu Mikole Tagon. Yeah. So the Nachash added. Rashi says, "Afisha ro some ochlim eshor peros hirbo leo dvorim, kideisha tashivenu v'yovol udaber ba'osa ha'etz." All right, so he says that the Nachash. Rashi says that the Nachash really added. I mean, he added. Why he added is because you see to add something. Okay, so Rashi is in order to engage her in conversation, but the. But the truth of the matter is that when you want to engage somebody in conversation, you can only do it if the things that you're mentioning have some kind of emotionally appealing in some way, some kind of contact emotionally. So when the Nachash added, he said, "Lo sochlu mikolei tzagon," it meant. What it meant was, when Chava heard that, she immediately responded. She said, "V'tomu yishal nochash no, m'priyei tzagon nochel." In other words, there's a restriction, and then there's an effect of the restriction. The effect of the restriction is that the person feels the effects to a greater degree than they are in reality. Person feels the effects to a greater degree, more disturbing. It's an interesting thing, more disturbing than reality supports. In other words, a person dislikes any kind of restriction by nature. So the moment there's a restriction, it seems like this restriction is overwhelming. That's why people who have this, they have a hard time, especially in Yadas. I mean, they have a lot of time enjoying Shabbos, for instance. The truth of the matter is, restriction on Shabbos allow a person a tremendous amount of leeway. There's practically nothing he can do. I mean, it's just the idea that he's restricted is something which is disturbing. So he feels like he's totally restricted. That's how the Nachash engaged at first. See, it says, "Af ki omar l'kim lo sochlu mikolei tzagon." Felt like that. I mean. No. The priates had gone no hell. It wasn't that bad. Okay? So there was a sense. She felt, that was the first thing you see from the pasuk, that she felt the sense of restriction was not in line with reality. That was the first thing. Interesting thing. First step. Okay. Umipri ha'eitz asher besel hagon. Omar Elokim, Pasagimo, Lo Sochlu Mimeno, Velo Sigubo, Pentamusim. You see already that what we said is true. Because she she didn't add, like the Nachash did, all the Eitz Hagon, all the Atzei Hagon, but she added in that one Eitz. Lo Sigubo. Lo Socham, Lo Sochlim Menevo, Lo Sigubo Pentamosim. Right? So already, you see that she added something to the... that's why Chazal say that... Well, let's see what happens. So... The next, so she added, she said, not only God said you shouldn't eat from the eights, but you shouldn't touch the eights also. She added to it. Okay? Yeah, pentamus, and that's what God said. God said, Kigon Chachamim Amas Thomas. Yeah, all right. It doesn't matter. Right. That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Okay. So it says, so she said the little sigabo. She added that. Vayoma hanocha shelo isha, lomos temusan. Lomos temusan. So Nocha said, no, you're not going to die. So of course Chava wasn't a dummy. Why should she believe him? Why should she believe him? God told her that she's going to die. The Nocha says, you're not going to die. Who's going to listen to him? Listen to God. So Chazal say that what happened, that the Nachash came and pushed her into the tree. And that's why once she touched the tree, so what happened? So nothing. So the Nachash said, you see, Lamos the Musa. Okay. That's why Chazal said, call her Mosef Gorea. Because she was Mosef, that's why he called her the problem. But somebody asked me a very good question. He asked me a question like this. They said, that why, let's go along with her theory. Her theory was that you're not supposed to touch the tree. All right, so let's just say that that's it. God said, don't touch the tree. Question is, now he pushes her into the tree. So therefore what happens? She's pushed into the tree, and she doesn't die. So the Nachash says, you see, it's not true. It's not true. He's a riot for his, he supports his argument, right? But the question is, she shouldn't die anyways, because it wasn't her fault. We know Anas Rachmana Patre. The Torah, when God gave Adam and Rishon the mitzvah, it was a mitzvah, a rational mitzvah, just like any other Macholos Asuras, except it applied to this tree. But basically, it was an Issa Macholos Asuras, and a mitzvah has certain gedorim. I'm sure God didn't say, and if you even do a bonus, you're going to die. It was a tivoy. Okay? It was a tivoy. So what was the proof? What was the Nachash's proof? Okay, the Nachash didn't have any proof, really. He pushed into the tree. Yeah, that's not what God said. God said, Lasigabo, you shouldn't do it consciously. You shouldn't do it at Bishagig, maybe, I don't know, but not bonus. Honestly, you can't. God doesn't punish a person for things he does bonus. It's not his fault. So what was the proof of the Nachash? That's a good question, too. That's a good question. That's a good question. Maybe she'll die later. Maybe she'll die later. That's a good question. You're right. That's also a good question. What Raya, really, when God said that she's going to die, it didn't mean immediately. You see, it didn't mean immediately. Okay, it means she'll be subject to Misa. That's what most people learn. She'll be subject to Misa. Didn't mean immediately. So why did she, you think, so that didn't prove anything either. You're right. She didn't die when she ate it. Okay. Good question. Okay. So, the next pasuk. Then you have another pasuk. Ki yodei Elokim ki biyom acholchem mimenu v'nifkechu einechem v'yisem ke Elokim yodei tovara. Then he says, God knows that the day you eat from this tree, your eyes will open up. A different kind of experience. V'yisem ke Elokim yodei tovara. You'll be just like God. You'll be like God. So what does it mean to be like God? So Rashi says, every craftsman despises a craftsman in his own craft. Why? Because it's competition. So he says, that's why God doesn't want you to do this. Because he wants to be the only one, and you'll also be like that. You'll be like him. All right? Why did the Nachash have to give this argument for? He just proved his argument of pushing her into the tree. Hey, so that doesn't work. So that's enough. What is the continuity? Okay. We have to answer the first question. The answer to the first question is like this. That you see... That it's an interesting thing. You see like this, that why did she think that she's going to die and immediately, and also she said you shouldn't touch it. Why did she add that, really? The answer is because what she did was she converted the mitzvah into something else. She converted the mitzvah into taboo. She took the mitzvah and made a taboo out of it. You see, a mitzvah is something, a halacha is something which engages the seichel, the mind of a person. That's what halacha is. A taboo is something which engages the emotion only. Only the emotions. That's what a taboo is. So what she did was, the beginning of the chait was that she took the mitzvah and reduced it to a taboo. This tree is a terrible thing. It's no good. It's evil. And if I go near it, then I'm going to be destroyed. That's what God told me. So it was something which once she converted it into something else, then it made sense. Don't touch it either. Don't touch it. Then when the Nachash pushed her into the tree, it didn't matter that it wasn't done willfully. Because a taboo doesn't make any difference whether you violate the taboo willfully or not willfully. You'll find if you study the primitive tribes, it will not make any difference. Or to take, study primitive tribes. You take a normal person today, and it wouldn't make any difference whether he willfully walked under a ladder or whether you pushed him under the ladder. He will be sure that it's just as bad either way. So what happened was, really, this is how the chait began. The chait began because she took a mitzvah that was really something that was given to her as halacha with seichel, and she converted it into something which is completely an emotional, primitive kind of experience, which is a taboo. We don't have any taboos. We only have halacha. And then the next pasuk follows. Ki yodei Elokim ki biyom achochon menu v'yisem ke Elokim yodei tov hara. What does it mean? It means that it starts off with a person being primitive in relationship to mitzvahs. See, Chazal say, what does Chazal say? Al tomari if she bipsar chazir. Al tomari if she bipsar chazir. And the Rambam has a whole thing on this. The Rambam says, who's better, kovish is yitzro, or a person that's oved me'avo? He does naturally, he's a tzaddik. So the Rambam says that the person is naturally a tzaddik. He says, and then what does he say? He says, the Gemara says, al tomari if she bipsar chazir. So you see, you shouldn't say if she b'sar chazir, and here the person is naturally good as if she. So he says no. He says no kasha. Why? He says Chazal didn't say al tomar if she b'ritzicha. Chazal didn't say al tomar if she b'talmud Torah. I mean tomar if she b'talmud Torah. Chazal didn't say you should say I don't like to learn. You know, fancy thing. Why? Because so what is the Rambam saying? What the Rambam is saying is that when it comes to perfection, what did Chazal mean when they said, Al Tomar Yifshi Bipsar Chazir? What Chazal meant was, you shouldn't make a taboo out of the halacha. That's what Chazal meant. That doesn't apply to Ritzicha. A person's not going to make a taboo out of Ritzicha. You know what I mean? If a person is not by Chazar, so a person can only relate to it as a taboo, is the only other alternative other than halacha. But Ritzicha, a person can be perfected, doesn't want to kill somebody, doesn't want to kill another human being. That's what the Rambam said, really. That's what the Rambam meant to say, that Al Tomar Yifshi Bipsar Chazir means, don't say it's a taboo. That's what it means. It's an amazing thing, but even today, this exists. And not only among common people, The Mashgiach spotted in a place that's supposed to have Ashgacha, he spotted that there was a chaza sandwich right next door, and right close by. So the Rabbanim heard this. They said, How did you know it was a chaza sandwich? He said, I don't even know what it looks like. Yeah, we don't even know what it looks like, and they were proud of the fact that they don't know what it looks like. That's taboo. On the contrary, I'll tell my Yeshiv Sachazir. Smells delicious. Looks beautiful. Halacha. Halacha says you can't have it. But people by nature tend to make a taboo out of halacha. So that was really the underlying cause of the chait. The next step the Torah tells you is initially thing. What's the next step? Ki yedei Elokim. At the moment you have a primitive relationship to the halacha, the next step is your concept of God is primitive. Your concept of God is primitive. Yedei Elokim. Then you start projecting onto God emotions of a human being. He's jealous. He doesn't want you to do this because he himself is his own personal gain. What does it mean? It means the primitive person. He starts off with the primitive in terms of his relationship to halacha, but in the end, the worst thing is that he finally develops primitive ideas in relation to God. That's the key of the Elohim. You know, that's the next step. That's the next step. You see. And the third step is, you see, I would say also, from the halacha, I would say, Af ki yomar lekim lo sochlu mikol etz hagan. And I'm saying that this is so not just with regard, as I said, not just with regard to people who are on a low level, but even to regard to people that are on a fairly high level, that it's so. That people relate to halacha as taboo. And they're different levels, at different levels. I would say that the key is, insofar as the person senses lo sochlu mikol etz hagan, that he feels overwhelmed by the restriction, that shows you that part of it is tabo. It's subject to variation of degree. Right? Because if it's halacha, the person can't sense that way. That's really what the pasuk is. That's what it's teaching us. Okay? Now, the next step is, pasuk tells you is, you think it'd be enough. It's stop there, okay? But no. Vateira ho isho kitov ho eitz lamacho, v'chisavo hi lo einayim, v'nechmar ho eitz lahaskil, v'tikach mi piryo v'tochal. Okay. So, apparently, what it was mean is an interesting thing. The Ramban says, it's a funny thing. Vateira isho kitov ho eitz lamacho. That would seem, if you had an order, what would you say? Would you say Ketov Eitz L'macho first, or the Chisav Ilanayim first? Which one would you put first? Ketov Ilanayim first, the person sees. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at the Pusik before, the Pusik says, Pusik Tess, Vayatzmach Haroshem Melokim Min Adomo Kol Eitz Nechmod L'mare V'tov L'macho. First comes Nechmod L'mare, then comes Tov L'macho. That's the proper order. Like Terez itself before. But over here it's reversed. Kitovo itz lamachol v'chisavo ulainayim. Purposefully reversed. What's the reason? The Ramban says it beautifully. The Ramban says, what does it mean kitovo itz lamachol? Kitovo itz lamachol. Ramban says, because before that, she looked at it as a dover hamemis. Something terrible. She looked at it as something terrible. See? It was taboo. And that's why it says kitov ha'etz l'machol. Now she looked at it in a different way. What happened was that the taboo was removed because the fear was removed. So what happened now? Now she was able. Now the whole thing. Now she able to look at it anew, in a totally fresh way. You see, in a totally fresh way. How tov ha'etz l'machol? This is a good fruit like any other fruit. There's no different than anything else. It's an interesting thing. But Chazal say. Chazal say, what fruit was it? Tov eitz l'macho v'chisavu le'nayim. Beautiful fruit. What do they say? It's machlokes. Some say an esrog. Some say it was a date, a fig, a teina. Some say it was a chito. I mean, whatever. I always wonder. I mean, I'm just saying this. What seems to me, off the top of my head right now. I mean, I didn't check out, didn't do any thorough research on it. But it seems to me. Why do Chazal say this, really? Why do Chazal say this? Because, we'll see, let's go a little bit further, we'll come back to this question. A little bit further. It says, Kitov Eitz L'machol, she looked at it anew, V'chisavahu L'inayim. What's V'chisavahu L'inayim? What is V'chisavahu L'inayim? V'chisavahu L'inayim means, the moment the taboo was removed, what happened? Then, Savahu L'inayim doesn't mean that it's nice to look at. V'chisavahu L'inayim means that she started to project onto that fruit some kind of a... the eye looking at it causes the person to project onto it some kind of fascination, some type of fascinating quality that she projected on the tree. That's what it means, chisavo lenayim. Some gets attractive, an attraction that went beyond the normal attractiveness of the fruit. That should be every, you know, things have certain beauty to them, but there was something more over there. Not just nice to look at. There's a taiva there. What is a taiva? That means she started to project some kind of quality, attractiveness to that fruit. And the last step was the Nechmod Ho'etz Lahaskil. Wasn't he Lahaskil? Lahaskil means, Rashi means Eitz Hadas Tovara. As God said, it was Eitz Hadas Tovara. Lahaskil means that she started to think that now she's going to have a new kind of experience. Nechmod Ho'etz Lahaskil. This is going to lead me into a new kind of experience, a new happiness that I'd never experienced before. That's the Nechmod Ho'etz Lahaskil. That was a further projection. That's the final stage. That's the final stage of Chet, really. The final stage of Chet. But interesting is, every step is beautiful. And it's step by step, the Torah goes, step by step, the whole development. But the interesting is that there is a direct ratio. You can look at it mathematically. All the energy that was wrapped up in the taboo, once it was released, where did it go? To the to fantasy, to the world of fantasy. The direct relationship. As much because energy, why is the Torah against taboo? We don't have anything against taboo. We only have halacha. The reason is because in taboo is really just the negative of the fantasy emotion. That's what it is. It's just the energy for the fantasy locked up with a wrapping that prohibits the person to go near it. But the moment the wrapper is broken, like over here, the way the nachash is broken, all that energy is released, and it goes directly towards the satisfaction of the fantasy and the physical. You see? And that's basically what happened to her. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. That's true. That's true. But you remind me, I forgot to answer your first question. First question, his first question was that why she thought she's going to die immediately. Now you see why she thought she's going to die immediately? But Donnie asked before. Because when it's a taboo, the fear is an immediate one. Nobody's afraid they're going to walk under a ladder, something's going to happen 30 years from now. It's an immediate fear. That's the way the emotions work. The emotions work in the present, quickly. Now your other question is, why Chazal say that this was all, I mean, the Pasuk doesn't say that, but the Chazal say this is all in the now where she was bored so quickly, how it's possible. The answer is, because that's the truth concerning the emotions of man. That's the truth concerning the emotions of man. The person can achieve their greatest desire. If a person wanted to win the lottery, that would be his greatest desire. He'd be extremely happy. But you'd think he'd be happy at least for 6 months, a year. I assure you, it would be a matter of hours. A few hours, a few days go by, the person faces his own boredom again, very quickly, very quickly. That's the nature of man. The nature of man is that experiences that give a person joy that are based upon changes are so short-lived that the person can't imagine how short-lived they are. In reality, he doesn't believe it's over so quick, you see. He doesn't want to believe it, so he might engage in other activities in order to convince himself that it didn't wear off. But that's just another activity. You wear off quickly, then sooner or later he has to face himself, you see. But that's what I believe why Chazal said that it was an hour, a very short time. Short period of time. Because a person, very quickly, unless, well, that's the whole thing of Yadis, the whole, That's what Yadis is, where the person's simcha, his happiness, is not based on the transient. It's based on a constant. The constant of his relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's something that doesn't change and doesn't wear thin and he doesn't get bored with. That's why Yadis really prescribes that happiness for man. You see. What the fruit was, you see? Why did Chazal say, what? I mean, I'm just speaking from time. I didn't do a thorough research, but just from the top of my head, all the Chazal I know is it got to this parsha. Why did they say, would you say that? I mean, would anybody say that? Say, which fruit was it? I don't know which fruit was. It was a special fruit. I don't know. Obviously, from the pasuk, it was some fruit that had the power to give man something different, endowed with a certain kind of awareness. What's the reason why Chazal said no? It's a regular fig. You look at a fig. Anything special about it? Nothing. The fig's nice fruit, okay. But what is so special about it? Nothing. What did Chazal show you? That when a person is under the influence of fantasy, a plain thing, something which anybody, any normal person says, it's a fruit, it's nice. But this person, this is unbelievable. This is the greatest thing, and he makes up his mind, he must have this. It's Savo Ilay Nayim. And Nechmora, it's Lahaskil. And what is it? It's a regular fruit. It's nothing. You see? Because it's from the person. It's the projection. That's what the Pasuk is teaching. That's why I think Chazal say, Was it this? Was it an esrog? Or was this? But they're telling you whatever it was a regular fruit that that exists now and doesn't have a, that doesn't people don't find it so attractive. They don't find it different than any other fruit. A little nicer, not nice, but it's not nothing with that special character that you, that the impression you get from the Torah. But the Pasuk is showing you that it was completely based upon her projection. And the truth of the matter is, what gave her that new dimension? She did it. She did attain a new dimension. It was a new dimension. But the dimension wasn't one that raised them higher. It was one that lowered them. But what was the dimension resulted not from the tree itself? The new dimension resulted from the experience of the chait. It's directly attributable not to the magical fruit. It's attributable to the experience of the chait. The moment the person was a chote, he changed the structure of his psyche. Because this was Briyas Olam, and man partook in his own creation through his inability to keep the mitzvah. You see, but it wasn't the fruit. Okay. Last week, we mentioned last week the idea of simcha. That the idea of simcha and yadus is only possible for nevuah. That no philosopher could have ever come up with an idea of simcha as a mitzvah. Because of the fact that to be happy, just for a person to be happy, is not something we say is bad, but it's neither bad nor good. I mean, it's neutral. I mean, only yadus took happiness and made it into a kima mitzvah. Idu asar Hashem b'simcha. Tachasha, like the Rambam says, tachasha lavad Hashem l'kachol b'simcha v'tuv leva. So, what does it mean? It means that the only... Why is that so? Because we explained last week that when a person reflects, since Nevuah tells us the opposite of what our Seichel would tell us. Because our Seichel would tell us, like David HaMelech says, Mo'enosh kisiskereno. But Nevuah tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does relate to us. Okay? It's something we don't understand. Mo'enosh kisiskereno is the proper attitude. But Yadus tells us nevertheless that we don't know the Darkei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu does have a close relationship with his Brios, and especially with Klal Yisrael. And since that's the case, when we reflect upon our state in that sense, it's a kiyum mitzvah. Only that happiness has a positive gain. Why? Because that happiness involves a metaphysical reality, which means the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and us. We're supposed to chalta shom fnei Hashem l'kecha, simachta atov v'esecho, simachta mufnei Hashem l'kecha. So happiness as a kiyum, as a positive kiyum, is only possible through nevuah. Without nevuah, no philosopher could ever come up with such an idea. It's impossible, because you'd have to know what the relationship between God and man is, and no philosopher can know such a thing. On the contrary, philosophers will always conclude to the contrary. And you see they do. Aristotle is. Philosophers always conclude the contrary. God is too great to relate to man. Okay? More energy kisses Quran. Same thing David HaMelech said. Okay. So Yadus really took the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is close to man and made it into a great mitzvah. Smachtam ofnei Hashem lakecham ivdu asad Hashem mesucho. Made a great mitzvah out of it. And it's a mitzvah which is so great that there's a terrible einish in the teichacha if a person fails to fulfill that mitzvah. Tachas shel avadat Hashem lakecha v'simcha v'tuv leva. Okay. So that's really that concept that simcha as a mitzvah is expressed in the positive and in the negative. It's expressed in the positive. U'smachtam lefnei Hashem lakecha. Aliyah l'regel. And it's expressed in the negative insofar as the yomtif that expresses it in the negative is Tisha B'Av. The yomtif that expresses it in the positive is Sholosh Regalim. Okay? Sholosh Regalim. Yom Tov. Ram says Kol Yom Tov and Kulam. Ram really includes Rosh Hashanah and Kippur also. But the fulfillment, the actual Kiyum HaMitzvah is Aliyah L'Rego, and being in Yerushalayim. That's the positive form of the mitzvah. The negative form, the negative is Tisha B'Av. And that's why the Rav said, I mentioned last week, that that in the tefillah of Shalosh HaGolim, the nusach of the Elitzion was introduced. B'nei Ve'Yisrael. Why? B'nei Ve'Yisrael Kvatchi was Elitzion Re'ah. Because of the fact that the two are in juxtaposition to each other, they're related to each other. So Chorban Abayis is really the absence of the scheme of Simcha. Imlo ala es Yerushalayim al Rosh Simcha. I mentioned the goal of the whole Torah is that a person's personal happiness should be converted into the happiness of his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch. That's the goal of our goal. That's the pasuk. Imlo ala es Yerushalayim al Rosh Simcha. Ibn Ezra says it means that I subordinate all my simchas to the simcha of Yerushalayim. I mean, simcha of Lufnei Hashem. That is the only real simcha. It's the only real simcha. That's why all these minhagim were introduced, in order to demonstrate that you were breaking a glass, in order to demonstrate that concept. So, but I wanted to add one thing that maybe it wasn't clear, that that the Chorban HaBayis, just like the fact that we had the bias, Vasuli Migdosh Shachanti Besochom is a cause for great simcha, when we reflect upon our state, which means our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so too, the removal of Yerushalayim, the loss of the bias, is a cause for great sorrow and anguish. That's Chorban HaBayis. That's Chorban HaBayis. Because the moment the bias is removed, it means that there's something is lost of our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That must cause sadness. And that's Tishbe. What? In fact, the Karolai, yeah. What Saul is saying is that the Karolai Moed means that they both have one common denominator. The common denominator is that it's a time for reflection upon the person's state. And the state, the real state, is the state is insofar as he relates to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, they both have a common denominator. It's interesting. And the shivas, the happiness and sadness also are really equal. Because you see, it's shivas yimei hamishta, and lumazeh you have shivas yimei avelos. Okay, sure. So it's zelumazeh. So they both are in juxtaposition to each other. Yeah. Okay. There's one thing we mentioned. We mentioned that that actually, and this is something which I think the common person doesn't realize, and I think it's an important point. Somebody sent me this an article. And the article is I made a few copies, it's somebody. A letter from the Warsaw Ghetto. It's called A Letter to God. Before he died. And unfortunately, he was one of the carbonos of the Holocaust. And he writes his personal grief and his personal anguish and how he thinks about God. I mean, it's a very heart-rending letter. But the point I want to make is there's a lot of things like this. A lot of things like this that are making their appearance today because of the fact that people somehow can't cope with the events of the Holocaust. And it's wherever you go. I mean, you can't escape it, really. And somebody wrote very well. He says the truth of the matter is, there were, Rahmanu Aslan, millions of Jews that were, that suffered, suffered grievous fates before the Holocaust. I mean, it's true that in size and dimension and scope, nothing so horrible ever occurred, but nevertheless, I mean, you can't minimize the various Holocausts throughout the centuries. I mean, you say, yeah, you know, I mean, hundreds of thousands, millions of people in different times. But the only thing is that this one, the person wrote very well, so this one was recent, so it's not good. You don't look at it as history. It's something that's part of the present. Yeah, part of the present. But what I want to mention is it's a sensitive issue, because the point is that no one could pass judgment on an individual who lived through such an experience. this person was a religious person, but they write certain things that, a very strong person. And the person is a very strong person, a very strong faith, and they died with saying Shema Yisrael. I mean, a very high level, a person to be able to have such strength of character to do that. But, I mean, it's something which we aren't even fit to praise such an individual, because we, Baruch Hashem, didn't live through such an experience. But, you see, the point I want to make is this, in our society, there's a lack of discernment. Lack of discernment. You see, there are different people grouped together, one type of affect, and they aren't discerning as to what the causes of the affects are. Like, for instance, I mentioned to somebody this week that people will consider if somebody is a great scholar and a plain person will approach them and will ask them a question. So if the great scholar simply pushes away the simple person and says, look, please don't bother me, this is nonsensical. So people will say this person is haughty. He's a haughty person. If he'll spend the time, or condescend and spend time with this individual, so he'll be considered a humble person. That's the way people will view it. Truth of the matter is that that's not true. That's not true. It has nothing to do with humility, and it has nothing to do with haughtiness. The Gemara says that Shammai was a person who was of the school that he wasn't too tolerant. And it was a shita. That was a shita. Because when the guy came and asked him, tell me the altar on 1 foot, so he pushed him off the steps. He said, he showed him, he fell on the floor, and he said, that's how much you can learn on 1 foot. So he came to Hillel, on the contrary, you know the story. So people look at Shammai, and it's amazing. I mean, I've even heard people who look at Shammai like he was a terrible person. I mean, almost like he wasn't in line with Amasara. Chas v'shalom, this is ridiculous. The Gemara never called Shammai a Balgaiva, and the Gemara didn't call Hillel an Onav because he answered him. The Gemara called Shammai a Kamdan. Kamdan is a Takif, a Kabdan. Hillel was considered a Savlon, Noach. Well, we made a Noach Kilo, Valye Kabdan Kishama. So people make a mistake. I mean, they're not discerning. They confuse Midos. It has nothing to do with Anivas. Truth of the matter is that the guy that asked the question didn't deserve an answer. I mean, it's ridiculous. Somebody will walk into Harvard Medical School and ask a great professor a stupid question. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absurd. You just throw them out. It doesn't belong there. So if a person condescends and answers the individual, he's not being humble. He's being tolerant. It's a different nido. Humility and arrogance is not a social phenomenon. Humility and arrogance is really a personal. It has to do with a. It's a very deep personal concept. Weish Moshe Anav Ma'od. It's really a concept. It's a relationship between a person and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it really is. The way a person deals with people in this situation is not a reflection of his anivus or of his gaiva. It has nothing to do with it. I mean, I know people that held at the Rav. People say the Rav, they don't like the Rav, because they said he's call him a Bal Gaiva. I mean, because he wasn't sometimes he didn't have patience for questions in this year. You want to say he wasn't the biggest sovereign? I mean, okay, I mean, if Brett wants to say that, you can say that. Your own opinion. But I wouldn't say that. But if a person would say that, at least they'd be in the right, in terms of the right yeah, the right description, the area. But the Rav was the greatest onav, because when the Rav approached the sugya, he approached the sugya with the greatest humility, and he would never impose his own feelings on his own on a sugya. On the contrary, he subordinated himself totally to the ideas. And if somebody would show him that he's making the slightest error, he'd immediately admit that he was wrong. That's anivus. But the fact that he didn't have patience all the time for every question, every nonsensical question, you want to say he wasn't the sovereign, fine. But it has nothing to do with anivus and gaiva. It's nothing different. It's a different mitos. But people are not discriminate. The point is that there's a lack of discernment. You see, there's a lack of discernment. And that's a problem that this society especially, we suffer from this problem, because in this society, the biggest virtue is to be a nice guy. That's the biggest virtue. And if you're not a nice guy, then you're the most horrible person. It's a very shallow way of evaluating human beings. But the lack of discernment carries over to this area also. Because we have to have the greatest compassion we can't have enough compassion for a person that lived through this situation. We can't have enough compassion because we don't know, Baruch Hashem, what the situation was. But simultaneously, it is dangerous, even in our act of compassion, to lack discernment, you see. And see, the letter, well, you take a look at it, you'll see. The letter, I mean, as I said, a person like this, I mean, we can only have highest praise for them because they kept their amunah to the end. But it doesn't mean that what they wrote philosophically is correct. It doesn't mean that. A person could be in tremendous tsar and say certain things from the bottom of their heart, and we can have compassion for what they say, but it doesn't mean that the ideas are correct. It doesn't mean the ideas are correct. That's a different thing. That's a mitzvah of emes. Emes isn't necessarily given to a person because they're suffering. Emes is acquired different ways to acquire the truth, but that is not the way. That's not the way the truth is acquired. Certain aspects of truth, maybe. Suffering is play a role, but it's not something which gives a person a right. It might give a person a right in a sense of being, give a person a right for other people's compassion, but not for their attesting to what they say as true. That's a different point altogether. So in my opinion, a letter like this, yes. Chazal say Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't judge a person when he's in terrible pain. And what he does, he does averus, he doesn't judge him, he's mechel. But the point that I'm trying to make is that in the letter, the letter becomes a philosophy already. It becomes justified philosophically. So in the letter, he expresses certain things which, I mean, I don't want to just like he says, in the past, when times were good, my attitude towards God was one of deep gratitude and indebtedness for his kindness. Now I feel that he owes me something. But I'm just reading one part. You have to read the whole letter. I'm not trying to just... That's not his attitude, really. He says, he expresses it. But later, you see, he has other feelings also. But I'm just saying, the point I'm making is that something like this can be a harmful thing for the masses of people. Because first of all, he talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a certain way, very critically, and he comes to the conclusion that no matter how critical he is of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no matter how much he feels that God acted unkind towards him, without kindness towards him, he still retains his emunah. But other people might not walk away with that same conclusion, you see. As you could read this letter, you could walk away with the opposite conclusion. The point I'm trying to make is that letters like this do not benefit people. I don't believe that a letter like this should be written to the public. Should be put in a journal for the public. I think it's a harmful thing, because people that don't understand anything about philosophy of Yadus will draw conclusions from this that are harmful. And all you're showing me is that this person didn't draw harmful conclusions no matter what. Yeah, but the reasoning that he's setting up is really such that it would justify. If the person would have said, because of this, I'm leaving the Torah, and an individual read this letter, said, look, all the suffering he went through, you'd say, look, I mean, you wouldn't have any time to stand, you see. So what I'm trying to say is that a lot of these letters that are these incidents with the Holocaust, it's a dangerous kind of a thing. Even if you show me that in the end this person retained his faith, but what you're showing me that what he was up against to retain his faith was so monumental that a normal person would be crushed. So a regular, on average person will walk away with this and say, just a second, it may have been very nice that he was kept his faith. But why should I? I mean, why should I do it? This is a kasha. This is a big kasha. Okay? You're right about that. You're right. That's right. That Kehelis, it's true. That Kehelis, I mean, it's true. A lot of people walk away from Kehelis, and they like what he said in the first part that appeals to their intellect. And in the end, the conclusion is, Mela, I mean, Sef Dovah Kol Mishra, one pasuk in the end is not going to make up for all the kashas you read. Yeah. But there's a difference, you see? And also you have Eov is the greatest self-criticism ever written. If you want to talk about self-criticism, that's Eov. Eov is a criticism of the tenets of Yadus. And yet the Torah wrote it. And if you want to go after that, I mean, that was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. If you want to go Mimosha Lamosha, the Marin of Uchim. How many people say the Marin of Uchim, I mean... They walk away and they say it turns them away from Yadus. I mean, there's no question. Why do you think Rosh Hashanah were against it? For that reason, Rosh Hashanah were against it. Because people read it and they can walk away with false ideas. But there's one difference between this. The difference is as follows. That those things like Kehelis and Eov and Rambam Svarim, the difference is that those Svarim are really Sifrei Chachma. And if a person would be able to penetrate them fully, they would come out with the conclusion that the Torah is Emes. Because, in truth, Kehelis does not contradict. Shlomo HaMelech did not have any doubts about Torah. The points he raises are kashas and answers, and kashas and answers. A person could walk away with a kasha. It's his problem. But the fact is that we can't suppress the emes. And because some people are going to walk away with a false notion, you can't suppress the emes. You want to take it further? The Rambam's example in the Marne Vochem is the best example. He says that the Torah could not have written anything more clearly than the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Echad, is one. Shema Yisrael, Ad Hashem Elokeinu, Ad Hashem Echad. And yet most of the world, most of the religious world, said it means, it's a reflection of their distorted idea of Trinity. So the Ram himself says. So the Ram says, you see from this, that no matter how straight God himself writes something, the world will, a person who is crooked, a person who is distorted, will twist it. And if you would suppress things because of people, because of their false notions, suppress the truth, then it's, you have to suppress Kol Tarkula. Kol Tarkula. Okay? Ayin tachas ayin, shin. Hanj is the case. You have to suppress the whole Torah. That we can't do. That Yadis can't do. But this person's letter is not a letter which contains Chachma. You see, just because the person suffered doesn't mean that his letter contains Chachma. We have to have discernment. You can't allow an emotion of Rachmanis, even Rachmanis, which is the best emotion, but a person can't allow that emotion, and the Ramban says, Yimachuyev to me, Merachim. It's one emotion that a person should try to attain, Ramban says. It's an emotion a person should try to attain. And because it's one that on the whole will guide him towards perfection, towards goodness. Even though sometimes that emotion has to be overcome also. But on the whole, the Ramban says a person should have an attitude of Rachmanis, not Achzoris. Should be Merachim. But even that emotion, shouldn't cause us to forfeit the emes. It shouldn't cause us to say that what the man says is philosophy, is truth, is true idea to the others. And unfortunately, that's what happens. See, unfortunately, that's what happens. There's a lack of discernment. Yes.
What type of
popularity is very simple. First of all, the popularity is whenever there's criticism of religion that itself is appealing, especially everybody walks around with the same type of kashas that they have. I mean, they usually have small kashas in their personal lives. And they enjoy reading that this is a big kasha, it gives a certain outlet. No, it's not so simple. So that's number one. That's appealing. Number one, that's very appealing. Yeah, religious group. Religious people. I one time mentioned that, you know, the fact that there was a Maimon Har Sinai is demonstrable, is provable. And that's the basis of Kol Torah Kulo. Rambam, but yet you'll find sometimes the most religious people don't want to hear a rational proof for it. Why? Very simple. Because religiosity, a person's religiosity is a tricky kind of, not such a simple thing. And many times people who are overtly, even consciously, very religious, are very happy to have a little exit in the back of their mind. That's human nature. So it doesn't, and it's not measured by how religious the person appears on the surface. That's not a barometer. Not a barometer at all. Not a barometer at all. That's what the Pirkei Avos says. The only one that knows a person's religiosity is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's even a Navi. That was a story with Shmuel Navi and David. So. I say, Ach lifnei Hashem Mashiach, right? Look at him. He said, "This is Mashiach Hashem." No. He, Adam Yerulainayim, the Kadosh Baruch Hu Yerulaleva. So, it's not a barometer. There's no barometer. But so that's one thing that's appealing. People like to hear questions. They like to hear kashas. It soothes their conscience. You see, number one, and two, also. The fact that the person retained he was a strong person, this individual, retained his emuna in spite of everything. Tremendous kayach in his nature, I mean, in his midos, to be able to do such a thing. But, and then people, that side also is something which is appealing, and that side of the Moshe Haskel is very good. But the only thing is, it's yatzaschar b'fseido, because the critique is makes God into something which is completely which to an average normal person would pull away from it, and it's the source of kfira for the general kfira today. You could say that a person who lived through the Holocaust, you can't judge him, and we're not on the level of judgment. That's true. But you can't say that he's right. That you can't say. You can't say the way that what he thinks is true. What he thinks is false. It's not the philosophy of the others. Yes? You could say, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bo B'Tri V'Reisa, but that's not the Shas HaMageifa. Shas HaMageifa is a different thing. Shas HaMageifa is different. You know the Gemara says, Kivin Shnit Rishus L'Mashvis, Ein HaMafkin Bein Tev L'Ra. So as a magefa, you're going to say you can't say it. Amafat means that the Ashgacha Pratius is nullified in such a case. It doesn't exist. So then you can't say that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave each person an assignment that they're able to live through. You can't fortify yourself with false ideas. That's not a good idea. That's not good. I would not suggest that. It's not a good thing. But the point I want to make with regard to this is the mistake, and this is the mistake that the people make with the question of the Holocaust borders on two points. There are two points, really, that there's a mistake. See, to my mind, this article is, in a sense, a chil Hashem. It's a chil Hashem. Because you're saying that there's no chesed of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the point I want to make is as follows. That our concept of chesed Hashem is not based on the attitude of this writer. See? And I'll show you the difference. We say that Kadosh Baruch Hu is Rachum. Rachum v'chanon. The question is, well, what about the Holocaust? The answer is like this. Our concept of a Kadosh Baruch Hu as a Rachum is not based on the attitudes that most people start, the premises that they start with. What we mean by a Kadosh Baruch Hu as a Rachum, we mean, first of all, the premises, what David HaMelech said, what I mentioned before, that Mo'enesh Kisiskareno, a person that real knowledge, he comes to the conclusion that we aren't worthy as human beings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's attention. The only reason the person doesn't think that way is because he doesn't understand. He has no knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He has no knowledge of Chochmas Hashem. He has no knowledge of Torah. He doesn't really have a knowledge of Chochmas Hashem. A person that doesn't have a knowledge of Chochmas Hashem, it seems the most probable thing to him, the most logical thing to him, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu should be concerned with every aspect, every little nuance in his life. That's the average person. That's a natural feeling, because a person is egocentric. But a person who is a Chacham realizes that that's an absurdity, and really, Mo'enosh Kisiskareno, we aren't worthy of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's attention, and the entire planet isn't worthy of his attention. It's a speck in the universe, and in terms of Chochmas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the more a person is Doresh Hashem, tries to, we can't understand Hashem. There's no way. No philosopher said we can understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's impossible, but that doesn't mean that you can't have a knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a human level. There's a certain knowledge that a person can attain. And the more knowledge that a person attains of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more he sees how man is really a worthless creature that's undeserving of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's attention. Nevertheless, we say, that's the premise. Mo'enosh Kisiskareno is the premise. That's the bottom line. Then we say like this, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a bria in which expresses infinite chesed, ha-meyer la'oretz v'la'dor m'aleha b'rachamin, v'tu'ay machadosh b'chol yom tam ma'asev reishis. It means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the fact that he sustains the Bria constantly, demonstrates the greatest mercy in the fact that the universe is created in a way that it caters to every need of man. So, every need of man. You say, Bari nefashas rabos v'chesron, and al kol mashar barlach is adem nefesh kol choy, like Tais says, al kol mashar bar, that Kadosh Baruch Hu created fruits, thousands, different types of foods, that can satisfy every kind of taste a person can imagine. Didn't have to. A person can be sustained very simply. But that's chesed shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's chesed shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that chesed, that's the beginning of realization of chesed shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We really don't deserve it, but nevertheless. And you'll see, the greatest scientists to this day couldn't produce one fruit that has the taste of a banana or an apple. With all the chachma, and we are fortunate that the planet is made in such a way that it caters to every need. Man is a meshuganess; he destroys the planet. That was the tzivui that Adam Rishon received. Tein daitchosh lo sacher asalami, because if you're machriv the olam, I'm not going to fix it. So that's the problems that we're encountering today, in modern times. But the chesed Hashem is infinite. I mean, a person can see it simply from the physical world. That's number one. That's chesed, unbelievable chesed to begin with. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is concerned with man, is concerned with us. And if man is corrupt, and because of that he can't avail himself of the goods that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he's corrupt, so that's not a flaw in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a flaw in man. The second thing is the bracha me'alor. It's the second bracha zavarabah. The second thing is if a person would give, if somebody would be the recipient of a vast amount of money, they definitely would feel that they owe the one who was the benefactor a tremendous amount of appreciation and thanks. Now, if somebody would be the recipient of a way of life in which they can achieve happiness, that's even more than money, even more than the greatest financial security that a person could receive, gift that a person could receive. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a Torah in which anyone that lives the life of Torah has the greatest possible enjoyment, happiness that he can experience. Is that not the greatest chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Not the greatest chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The fact that he gave us he gave us a way of life which gives us what good is all the means that a person has if he doesn't know how to live his life? It's worthless. All the money and all things that you see. I mean, you have to look around too far. You see the people, successful people, the miserable lives they lead. It's impossible. It's impossible for a person to arrive at the proper way of life on his own. It's actually almost impossible. One of Ram Avinu. Nobody else could do it. So, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu with his chesed gave us a Torah which gives us a life of happiness, that's not chesed. Mo'enosh kisiskarenu. You see, mo'enosh kisiskarenu. So that is completely forgotten about. And moreover, there's another dimension to it, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu guaranteed in the Torah that if Klal Yisrael follows and listens to the way of the, follows the mitzvahs and keeps the Torah, that there will even be even subdue nature of Klal Yisrael. So that's the ultimate gift. You understand what I'm saying? That is the framework. That's the proper framework of perceiving Chesed Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The other framework is an egocentric framework. It's not a rational framework. It's not rational. But man by nature is egocentric, so he falls into that trap. But a person must always have before his mind's eye what the truth is. The chesed, that's why the chazal say, I mean, the Vim, Torah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, chesed shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu is infinite. It's only man's distortion, which causes him to cast a doubt upon chesed shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's one, I said there's two areas of error. That's one area of error. The wrong perspective, b'negeya HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship to man. That's one. It's a serious one. But there's a second one also, which is secondary. It's subtle, but it's important as well. See, people think, and you see in the article also, usually these two things are displayed. The article also implies clearly that since HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't good to me, so therefore, by rights, I shouldn't keep the mitzvahs. See, I don't owe him that anymore to keep the mitzvahs. This is based on a gross philosophical error, and that is that we keep mitzvahs in order to benefit HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Big mistake. What do we say in Elah? V'im yitzdak mayitan lach. Based on a pasuk in Eiv. So, it means that it's absurd. The whole Ramban, there's a tremendous Ramban on this in Kan Tzipor. That it is is in Yadis the greatest absurdity to say that we do mitzvahs for our Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's ridiculous. We do mitzvahs because it's the best thing for us, for our lives. This is the best thing, and we're fortunate that our Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us a Torah and taught us how to live properly so that we can benefit not only in Olam Haba, in Olam Hazeh. So Olam Hazeh, as a matter of fact, the Torah, the Kol HaTorah Kulo, has mentioned a word about Olam Haba. Only Olam Hazeh, the Torah mentions. Only Olam Hazeh. So a person that we keep the mitzvahs because it's good for us in Olam Hazeh and in Olam Haba. But the implications of these articles are that since HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't to the person's mind good to him, so therefore he should leave the Torah. This would be absurd. This would be a person saying that because I'm suffering one tragedy, I might as well make it worse. I mean, this is totally nonsensical. It's totally nonsensical. It means the person's going to harm himself even more. Every mitzvah that a person does is a benefit for the individual. Kodesh Baruch Hu gave it for man. It's a benefit for him, not a benefit for Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's Chesed Hashem. So the philosophy behind it is a childish philosophy. It's based upon a notion that an infantile notion that a person is doing mitzvahs in order to help God. This is childish. It's against Kol HaTorah Kulo. It's really an idea that is false. It borders on kfirah because it's a wrong idea b'negei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know the Rambam said in the Mar Nevuchim. Rambam said in the Mar Nevuchim that a false idea b'negei HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the worst idea that you could have, because it means your whole life revolves around that idea. And here you see that a person's whole life can revolve around the idea that he's doing mitzvahs for God, which is a distortion of his whole mahus. It means that everything that the person does can't rise above that level. You see, that's why the Rambam says in the Mar Nevuchim that a wrong notion pertaining to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the most harmful notion that a person can have. Because if he has a wrong notion, that's why you have Gimli Karim. That's why the Ikrei Hadas was so emphasized. Unfortunately, not emphasized too much today, but they were very emphasized in the time of the Rishonim, because a wrong idea of Avir is a wrong idea of a person's whole life. Everything he does after that can't rise above that level. So it's a limit. It's a built-in limit. Any mitzvah he does, if that's the idea behind that mitzvah, he's missing the whole point. So the level can't be achieved, can't be attained, you see. Those two ideas are usually what's found in these type of articles. So my point is that there should be discernment, that rachmonis for people that live through tragic situations is not only in place, but if a person doesn't have rachmonis, then he's an achzor, and there's something lacking in his nature. But simultaneously, rachmonis should not be a factor in determining what the truth is, and therefore, and thereby, cholila, having a wrong notion pertaining to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his relationship to us, and pertaining to Asiyas HaMitzvahs. I think it's an important point that should be stressed. And it's something that, unfortunately, today is not being addressed, and the catastrophe is rampant. Rampant. Okay. Dangerous. The people are usually caught because they say either you justify HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in which case you're going to condemn the generation of the Holocaust. You say the word Rishayim. You see, or else if you say the word Tzadikim, send a kasha on the Rabbeinu Shlomo. You see, they're caught in that in that dichotomy. They can't work it out. But the answer is really, the answer was worked out a long time ago, because that's really, Tzidek HaDin is no contradiction. Tzidek HaDin is no contradiction Tzidek HaDin is no contradiction to the Chesed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or not a reflection upon the Tzidkis and the Rishis of the person who suffers. I mean, you see that a person in Yadis, if a person is sick, so it would be awesome for a person to say, he's sick. No, I'm from Kodesh Baruch Hu, so I shouldn't go near him. On the contrary, he's a chiyuv. It's not our area to judge another person. If a person is rachman l'tzlan not feeling well, a person or a velus, you don't say that. Of course, a person died young, or because a person died tragically, that's a reflection upon his state of rishis or tzidkis, and chas v'sholom. And that's just thinking yadus. So, but nevertheless, even the greatest tzaddik, we still say tzaddik adin. We still say tzaddik adin. So tzaddik adin is not a contradiction, because of the fact that we say ki lo machshavah osayim machshavah osayichem v'lo dachechem d'rochot. And there's no contradiction between tzaddik adin and between a catastrophe. There's no contradiction. Both the person is a tzaddik gomor, and nevertheless we say tzaddik adin. There's no contradiction, because ki lo machshavah osayim machshavah osayichem. That's based upon the false notion that we can fathom the wisdom of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And it's a funny thing, but everybody somehow or other feels that they have the ability to do this. I mean, it's an amazing phenomenon. It's an amazing phenomenon. Talking about their scholastic achievements, they admitted that they couldn't really, jokingly, they couldn't really work out an algebra problem, you know. But nevertheless, in the same conversation, the person told me that they're ready to meet a Kadosh Baruch Hu with strong tinus. It's an interesting thing. It's an amazing contradiction. But people, man's egocentricity is unbelievable. So a person that can't even understand the simplest notion of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's bria is ready to confront the Bira Elam. I mean, the idea is an absurdity. It's an absurdity. But it's an absurdity that due to human nature we live with. But we who embrace the Das HaMS, we don't find the contradiction. There's no contradiction. A person is tzaddik gomor, and yet we say tzaddik adin. Yeah, it's pasuk kelas. Al tavav apicha. Where isn't it? Perikei pasuk kelas. Yeah, that's true. So the question of if a person will, there's no reason to condemn the generation of the Holocaust. That doesn't mean that you don't say tzedek adin. Doesn't mean you don't say tzedek adin. Yeah. But the fact is, I'm speaking on a personal. But the fact is, and I mentioned this before, that the Torah says that whenever a tzara befalls Klal Yisrael, I spoke about this before, befalls Klal Yisrael, there is a reason. There is a reason for it. It's an onesh. It definitely is an onesh. There's no question about that. And it's an onesh, and there's mishpat. But that's true. So that would mean that definitely you have to say, because the Torah says that if the Klal Yisrael keeps the Torah, so then they'll receive the brachas. And if not, then an onesh. So there's no question about it. There's no question about it that it's true. When it comes to Klal Yisrael, that there's no such thing as the Ein Misa B'lo Avon. So there's no Onesh unless there's another. And it means that definitely there was a Chet. That Klal Yisrael definitely had a serious Chet. But the question is there anyone that knows the chait, understands the chait, or even if they do, that is roy to expound upon it? See? And if you can't, so then there's nothing you can say about it. And that's it. Situation, but the situation is that you can't. As much as the situation is that you can't. Because in order to do that, you'd have to be able to demonstrate what the chait was, and not only demonstrate what the chait was, but you'd have to be able to demonstrate it in a way that would be of benefit, be beneficial to people, not in a way that would be critical and would simply denounce the previous generation. Okay? All right. But the Pasuk says that that eventually Christ will do tshuva. Vizvados avonon, vizvonov osam. V'malam asher malubi. That's what it says in the Techo. Yeah, they will. They will. Eventually they will. But the question is, today, can somebody do that and say that even if the person did know what the chet is, can they do it? It doesn't seem that they can. It doesn't seem that that's possible. But he was able to round up Klal Yisrael and to demonstrate to them the chet. But there's no one today that is capable of doing that. There's no one today that's capable of doing that. So that's why that can't be done. You know, the general rule is tzadik v'tovlo and rasha v'ralo. That's the general rule. And the reason why people don't think so is because they don't know what tov is and they don't know what ra is. But there is occasionally, as Ramban says, but occasionally you find tzadik v'ralo. We don't understand it. Then we just say tzadik adin, we don't understand it. But in terms of the klal, that's the situation. So you can't really do it. You can't really just go and condemn a door. And it has to be, the reason is, of course, you know what the reason is? The reason is the pasuk, v'svadu es avonom v'yasavon avosom. It means that we apparently partake of the same flaw. And we don't understand it. So there's no one yet that could be a mora derech to demonstrate what the chet was and how to do tshuva. But it's definitely because of chet. Because the Gemara says, because the Chazal say, any door that the Migdash isn't built biyom of, it's kilu nechrava biyom of. So that means to say that we are distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu because we're distant. There's a chet. We have a serious problem. But what that problem is, but to condemn, unfortunately, what happens is the condemnation on the past generation is usually one, when people do give these condemnations, it doesn't sound like v'svadu asafonu v'savonu v'osam. It's more like a condemnation of a previous generation, which is wrong, which is achzorious, right? Yeah, it's criticizing the previous generation, and it's not v'svados avonos avonos, but there definitely is an avon there. There's no question about it. And I'm Nochastinus, beginning of the parak, that if there's a tzara, it means that because beglam I say him a roim balahem kach. And they're chayev in tshuva. I mean, that's a klal. The glam maaseim aroyim. What are the maaseim aroyim today? I mean, we don't know. I mean, it's a difficult question to answer. But that it's so is definitely so. Yeah. But I still want it. But the point is, that's still above and beyond Chesed Hashem. That's because above and beyond Chesed Hashem. That's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us that avtacha that if we live properly, that is Chesed Hashem. That is Chesed Hashem. Right. Yeah. The fact that there's a shallowness, that's definitely something that's unfortunate. And there's a certain shallowness with regard to Yadus, the philosophy of Yadus, in general. A certain shallowness that becomes acceptable. People even will think there's tremendous amkis in a teisvus, but they won't believe there's amkis in understanding the philosophy of Ashkafas Yadus, which is crazy. Ashkafas Yadus is the whole basis. If the base has no... And there's no amkus. How could the details have? How could Allah have amkus? There's infinite amkus in Hashkafa. Infinite amkus in Hashkafa. Hashkafa is the whole framework. Yeah. The moment you say that if there's an onish to Klal Yisrael, it could still be that there's no chet. The moment you say that, you're taking away a mitzvah from the Torah. Because the mitzvah in the Torah is Bariyosa Machatzeitzreis. That whenever there's an eis sara, so you have to be a tainis, and you have to do tshuva. So sheikdeshiyedo kol shebeglam asem aron bolem kach. The moment you say that there's an onish without a chait, you're taking away that mitzvah. That's what you're saying, basically. You're saying there's no such mitzvah because maybe the onish was in order to prevent something. So you can't say such a thing.